During our episode on moonlighting, at one point I had like the worst voice crack when I said yeah. And I was like, well, the world doesn't need to know about that. So I deleted it. So there's one fewer yeahs that episode than there should be.
Josh, agreed? Yeah? I don't know. What
One, two, three, hit it, boy! Whoa!
Get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh! Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot across the freaking street and say it until we come and get you!
Hello, and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Josh Carter.
And I'm Kendrick Martin. Today we have a first time. We're doing it for the first time. I mean...
the very first time.
Yeah, we're doing this for the first time. And by that I mean a part two.
Oh yeah, that's true. We've never split something apart before. This is our Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or our Hobbit, or our other thing that does this. We're doing this for money, essentially.
Twilight?
Yeah, Twilight. Yeah, we're doing this for money reasons, because we get paid per episode.
We're so greedy.
By ourselves.
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're talking about, well, I apologize. If you do know what we're talking about... well, Josh apologizes, but regardless, we're going to be talking more moonlighting today. So last episode, we talked about the pilot and the second season episodes that we watched. Today, we're going to be talking about the third season episodes. So there's going to be four episodes that we are going to talk about, all found within season three. If you want the backstory on... moonlighting, what it is, why we're talking about it, you can go check out last episode.
You can find all of our previous episodes, including that last episode, at williswaypod.com. And then you can also find other podcasts in the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network over at lastoftheactionheroes.com. If you rate and review us on iTunes, tell your friends and every single pet that you have, including your fish, about our podcast, we would definitely appreciate it. Because, after all, who doesn't have enough... no. Who doesn't have too much... no. Nobody has too much Bruce Willis in their lives.
There it is.
There we go. We'll fix that in post, I'm sure. So
exactly. Funny story. I recently got my health insurance through work needed me to fill out some new... like program paperwork online. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, your name, your date, your height, blah, blah, blah. And it was asking various other questions. And one of the questions was like, does anyone else live with you and how supportive are they of you, of your health? It was like a health questionnaire. And the example was like, my dog is very supportive of my health. So we're looking for that, but for this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. If you guys ever want to reach out to us, just feel free to send an email over to williswaypod@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us by tweeting at williswaypod. And you can follow our Instagram account, also at williswaypod. There are only a few followers so far. So if you're within the first 100 followers, congratulations. You've won. You didn't win anything other than our deepest affection, but you do win. And then you can also find us over on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network Facebook page. So if you just type that into your little Facebook search bar, up will pop a little Facebook page, and we're on it.
Yep, that's how Facebook works, and that's how pages work. So I'm really glad that's how that works.
There's like a running joke that Kendrick's wife just cannot stand the banter in episodes. So we're just going to put out a tag at the beginning. Like, if you're Stacy, you know, skip like the first 12 minutes of this episode.
Mm-hmm. It's all, we're only talking about pets and Facebook.
Exactly. In fact, we're not even going to talk about moonlighting this entire episode. It's just going to be about our pets and our Facebook experiences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That we're going to keep doing that until we get another review on Apple Podcasts. We're holding the podcast hostage. All right, so Joshua, Moonlighting season 3.
Yeah, Moonlighting season 3.
Last time we talked, I was a little more positive on this than you were. But we both thought it was on the show.
Yeah.
In general. But we both thought it was worth watching for anyone listening. It's, like we said, it's hard to find. But if it's possible to find, if you come across it, to me, it seemed worth watching. Specifically, the episodes we're talking about. But in general, it seemed like a fun watch. Did the season 3 stuff improve or worsen your view? Or you still feel about the same?
I think that I had to reflect on it a little bit more. But once you said Bruce W.I., when I was editing the episode, I kept like pausing around that point being like, yeah, you're right. It is probably a Bruce W.I. And especially that Atomic Shakespeare episode, that kind of elevated it a little bit for me. And as did the big man on Mulberry Street, which we're going to talk about as well. I wasn't as big on the finale, but I don't think that I would knock it down from that W.I. So I think I am going to bump it up a little bit from where it was at last time.
Nice. Yeah, the finale to me is the weakest of what we're going to talk about and also the most problematic of probably any episode of any moonlighting episode I think we've talked about, but we'll get to that episode. So, the episodes
we're
going to
talk you have specific problems with black and white, in which case it's not the most problematic episode.
Yeah. or you can't hear mono oral sounds,
exactly.
Or whatever. What's funny is we talked last time about that episode where Orson Welles is saying, you know, moonlighting is doing things no other TV show has done and is being so weird and we're gonna go to black and white. And this was before anything in this season, which I feel like is so much weirder.
Yeah.
Than, or even the later episodes of season 2, like Camille, so much weirder than that episode where they go black and white and do some dreams. But I don't know, maybe the 80s were a weird time.
Yeah. It was wild how they gave like a warning for that one. And then the rest of the show, they're like, yeah, they can figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. The 4 episodes we're going to be talking about are Big Man on Mulberry Street, which I believe is the 6th episode of season 3.
Yes.
Atomic Shakespeare, which is the 7th. The Big Poop, which is the 9th. And
the Straight Poop.
Sorry, the Straight Poop. The Big Poop, whatever. You know, it's got poop in the title.
Yeah, that's the most important part.
And then the finale, which I don't recall the title.
I am curious, ... Maddie.
And that's the 14th episode of season 3. So those are the 4 episodes we're going to talk about. This show goes on for 5 seasons. But a lot of people, it's generally thought that the season 3 finale is kind of the turning point in the best episodes. And after this, the quality starts to take a dive. And we also don't have access to seasons 4 and 5 in any DVD form or fashion.
So as far as we're concerned, those seasons suck until we have access to them.
Mm-hmm. And then they might be all right.
Yeah. Misaligned or much maligned masterpieces.
Yeah, exactly. And we talked a lot last time around Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis's relationship and the general vibe of the show. And so if you want to hear that discussion, you can pop back to last episode. But obviously a lot of those thoughts hold true for the season 3 stuff. Let's dive into Big Man on Mulberry Street. So this episode to me stands out particularly because it is the most dramatic and least funny of any of the episodes, I think. What did you think?
Yeah, I loved this episode. I really liked the super like film noir-y type of vibes that it had with all the like monologuing that was almost to the camera, but like definitely to the audience more than to the other characters. It felt kind of like stagey in some of those ways, but it felt like a good stagey. And I loved the way that they decided to tell the conception that Maddie Hayes has of David's backstory through dance. I thought that that was amazing. I was like, man, no, I have never ever seen a TV show do something like that. Not comedically, because I've seen stuff like that in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or whatever, but I haven't seen stuff like that done in a serious way where it's like kind of a weird concept, but they lean into it and they use it for a dramatic purpose instead of a comedic purpose. And I loved it. I was so, so impressed by that dance sequence especially. And so that kind of like elevated the episode to this really high point. And throughout the rest of the episode, it has ups and downs. Like, I think that when Bruce Willis is sitting in the cab kind of towards the end of the episode and doing this monologue to the cab driver, that didn't really work as well for me because he's like kind of trying to play drunk, and I didn't really buy it that much. But overall, I thought that this episode was really moody and really heartfelt and super nuanced, and I really appreciated it. I thought it was one of the best episodes that we had seen so far.
Mm-hmm. It is a big shift in quality, I thought, from the season two stuff we had seen. And it really, to me, was able to kind of stretch the actors. Because you got to remember, Bruce Willis, fresh actor, you know, not having done much of anything at this point. So yeah. him able to play these dramatic roles, play these like serious moments, and giving Cybill Shepherd a chance to kind of not just be the angry partner in that detective agency, I thought worked really well. So we should dive into the plot of this episode. It opens with Bruce Willis essentially telling Maddie Hayes, Cybill Shepherd's character, that he has to go back to Philadelphia for the funeral of his ex-brother-in-law. And she's shocked because she didn't know he was married. And he is super tight-lipped about it and is just like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm just going to go. I'll be back in a couple days. And he packs up his stuff and heads out. And up until now, obviously, you know, Bruce Willis's character has been extremely flirty and is always trying to get with Cybill Shepherd, either via date or like comment or whatever. And he obviously is extremely interested in her, and she's always kind of like pushed him aside and being like, no, you silly man, you're just a fool. But here we start to see that she actually does care about him. And when she's, because after he leaves, there's this moment where she is kind of thinking like she's envisioning a relationship and being like, what happened? Why was he married? Why did he get divorced? Like all this stuff. And that's where this dream sequence that you talked about, or fantasy sequence, whatever you want to call it, where Bruce Willis is a bartender and he's meeting people and he's dancing, they're getting up on chairs, and you know, he's falling in love with this woman, and this whole kind of fantasy scene where he meets this girl is kind of played out. I thought that was all really interesting, and I loved showing, because obviously the romance of the two of them plays a big part in this TV show. And we hadn't got to see a lot of her actually caring for him. It was mainly just kind of like becoming less annoyed by his comedic antics and more willing to play along, which is fine. But I wanted to see some alone time with her where she could be like, yes, I do care for this guy. It's not just a facade or like the comedy. And I thought we really got to see that here.
Yeah, she got to show a lot of agency through that episode. And I think that that was really important to like advancing the believability of their relationship.
So the episode continues where she's kind of like dreaming about what's going on, and she starts to get worried that Bruce Willis is going to reconnect with his ex-wife, and she starts to realize that she has feelings for him. And it's never really quite explained. She just kind of like up and decides, hey, I'm going to go to Philadelphia. And she flies to Philadelphia and goes to his hotel and then is like, oh, this might have not been the greatest idea. And she eats a room next to his, and they have like a lot of heart to heart. And he kind of explains this story around catching his ex-wife with the census taker, tax collector, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, census taker.
Yeah, basically cheating on him. And that, and then he kind of goes off and spends the rest of the, he drinks the rest of the night away. And then Maddie Hayes kind of goes through the various investigatory process of figuring out what funeral he's at and where the wake was. I thought this part is where the believability got a little too strange, because I could understand it up to some point, but I felt like she started to like pry too much. And I was like, no one would do this. Like, surprisingly fly to someone that you don't really say you care that much for across the country, then staying in this like same hotel, then tracking down the funeral they're at. That was like starting to be a little too much for me.
Yeah, I wanted to see more of what her thought process was. And I think that the big problem was is that, like, narratively, she didn't have anybody to bounce stuff off of except for him. And she really needed, like, another character that would allow her to tell the audience and kind of talk through why she's doing stuff, I feel.
Because she brought Mrs. DePesto. Ms. DePesto.
Well, yeah, but I don't know that she's the right choice either, because she's mostly comedic. She does fill that role in the later episode, but I don't know that it was, like, something that I really bought necessarily.
Yeah. And then the ending, which I don't know if this is ever touched on in, it's not touched on in the episodes we watched. It may be touched on in other episodes. I'm not sure if this is ever brought up again, but basically she finds out that, Bruce Willis's wife was not his, David Addison's character. She was with another woman, and that was, I didn't go back and rewind it and see if he said a man or if he just concealed that part and Maddie thought it was a man. But there's basically this reveal that she left him for another woman, and that's kind of like crippled his ego and ability to kind of cope with it. And so he skips the funeral and has spent the rest of the time kind of drinking by himself, coping, venting to the cab driver who's got the meter running while he just drinks under a bridge.
Yeah. And that was like kind of funny, but I feel like it would work better in an episode that wasn't as serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought overall the episode had a lot of great emotional moments, and I was curious to see if that story beat would have gotten brought up again, but I'm not sure it was. But they obviously, like, I was glad to see them care about one another a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if you you noticed, but at the end of the episode, they also said our deepest appreciation to Mr. Stanley Donen. Did you see that?
Mm-mm, no.
Yeah, so at the end of the episode, it says that, like, right before all the rest of the credits roll, and I was like, what is going on? Who is this person? Well, I look him up, and he's, like, famous old Hollywood director who directed Singing in the Rain and the movie Charade and like a bunch of other stuff as well. But he apparently directed the dance sequence that they did.
Did he pass away around the time this was released?
No, he didn't. He just directed it. He passed away in 2019. The guy lived to be like 95.
Huh.
Yeah, so all wild. Right, but yeah, cool. Yeah, I just read that on Wikipedia, and then apparently that song was also written by Billy Joel, the song that they danced to.
Oh. Huh.
I think written and sang by Billy Joel. So. Yeah, it was a great episode. I was really impressed with that episode, and it felt like it was actually hitting some really good emotional beats. And then the next episode is very silly, but also I feel very good.
Yeah, so the next episode I think might be my favorite episode just because of its pure chaos and willing to be completely unusual. So this episode is Atomic Shakespeare, which if you look up much about moonlighting, this is probably what you'll see the most of because it stands out among most of these episodes and costume, setting, everything. The framing device in and of itself is very funny. So the episode starts with the normal opening credits and then transition to a television with the moonlighting credits still playing on them. And there's a little kid, like a 10-year-old or something, watching TV. And you don't see, you just see like him, his feet watching TV. And then you see his mom's feet come in and she's like, you know, little Tommy, you got to go do your homework. And he's like, but mom, moonlighting's on. And then he's like, all right. And he goes upstairs and he does his homework. And his homework is to read The Taming of the Shrew by Shakespeare. And then the rest of this episode is the cast of Moonlighting performing The Taming of the Shrew, but in a like completely comedic and parodied way that kind of parody the show in and of itself and also poke fun at just everything they're doing here. I think this is also the first time I noticed, I cannot remember his name. Who's the love interest of DePesto?
Oh yeah. This is the first time that I saw him too.
So he may have been introduced in an episode we didn't watch. Curtis Armstrong. He plays Herbert Quentin Viola, and I know that he was introduced around this time because the showrunners knew that Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis weren't getting along, and they needed something else to write about in the show, and so they wanted to give DePesto a love interest. So he plays the narrator / I don't remember his character name in The Taming of the Shrew, but and then Cybill Shepherd, Maddie Hayes plays Katrina, and then Alice Beasley, who normally plays Agnes DePesto, plays her younger sister, the character in The Taming of the Shrew that is most desirable, and then Bruce Willis plays Petruchio, the quote unquote tamer. And then I think that's all of our familiar faces, right? None of the other people that show up are show regulars, if I am correct.
That is correct. However, we do have a Star Trek connection in this episode.
I don't know if we mentioned it last time, but obviously...
Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg, and then I can't remember if there's another one, but Whoopi Goldberg was the main one, Star Trek connection for the first set of episodes. But in this episode, Josh,
it is Mr. Cole Meany, aka Chief O'Brien,
our friend and comrade. Is he the person we decided had the most Star Trek episodes?
I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's in the most Star Trek episodes. He plays one of the Katrina's lovers in the beginning. And so, like I said, this episode doesn't hold back and is just extremely silly in stunts and special effects, but people go flying, costumes are all, you know, at 11.
There's weird sound effects.
They speak in iambic pentameter the whole time. And it was all very funny. I think my favorite part of this is when Bruce Willis's character is introduced and he comes in with sunglasses riding a horse and the horse is also wearing sunglasses. And then his first lines proceed to be from like four different Shakespeare plays. And everyone keeps saying, wrong play, wrong play. So he's like, wherefore art thou, Romeo? And all this other stuff. And people are like, you're in the wrong play. I thought that all that stuff worked really well for me.
Oh, yeah. It totally clues you in, like, no, this is not supposed to be serious. It's okay to laugh. So, yeah, his stuff in there was so, so funny. I also don't, I don't remember if this is the case, but this episode, I think, might have two narrators if that one guy also was narrating it.
You're right. There was a actual narrator there. I don't know what you call that in a play. If you know, listener, you should email us. But the character in a play who talks to the audience and tells the story, but then there's also the narrator who's like reading the book. I did know that Sterling something or another. He's the voice of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, because I kept like hearing stuff and it was like, and then this happened. And I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
I know the voice of Winnie the Pooh when I hear one. But apparently this was his last role.
Sterling Holloway. Wow, really?
Yeah, he did it 6 years before his death. But yeah, this is his last role. This is Orson Welles' last role in Moonlighting. So it's kind of wild that there's like very famous Hollywood people that this is like their last big thing, because it was like a really big thing to be a part of. I think that it might have been what's his face's last role as well, the guy that we were just talking about earlier, the guy that directed the that segment. It was either his last or second to last.
What? Who are we talking about?
The Stanley Donen.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like his third to last thing.
Huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like a lot of people kind of were maybe in, like, semi-retirement, and then Moonlighting's coming around, and they're like, all right,
yeah.
I guess I'll hop out and do that, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, for sure. You're right, though. I also recognized that voice of being like, what the heck? And then going on being like, oh, yeah, Winnie the Pooh, and every Disney movie around that time.
Yep. Yeah, because he plays like Ka, the snake in the Jungle Book, and he's somebody else in the Aristocats. So, yeah, you've seen Disney movies from the Golden Age and the Silver Age. You definitely have seen this person or heard this person's voice.
And he has like a very distinctive voice too.
Oh yeah, totally.
Let's see. Yeah. Oh, and this is also an episode we get to hear Bruce Willis sing. He sings some.
Yep.
I thought that was fun. There's a Shining reference where he can't get in Maddie Hayes' room. Or I guess her character's Katrina in this. And there's like an axe next to it that says like break in case of shrew. And so he breaks the glass and takes the axe and then tears down the wall and then goes, it's Petruchio. I thought that was all really funny.
Super. There's some like really good innuendos too in that episode as well. Yeah.
All very funny. It's been a long time since I've seen Taming of the Shrew, and there's in the plot is basically they have to marry her off in order to get her younger sister married, which is more desirable, and so they're like plotting to get her married off, and if she's married for a year, her dad will give Petruchio a large sum of money, and so he takes her off and then like slowly woos her over time. And in this episode, it's shown as very much of like a forced marriage where she's bound and tied, and the priest or the, you know, bishop or whatever is just kind of like, okay, I guess we'll do this. And I was like, that's real weird. But that's actually kind of how the play goes. And I was a little surprised.
Oh, yeah. I've only read the book. I haven't seen any of the filmed versions of it or seen it on stage at all. And I read it like a long time ago. Like probably 8th or 9th grade.
Most of it's been most of the like adaptations I've seen, they don't have the plot will basically be like, if you can date this girl for long enough or whatever, we'll give you this award, and or you know, whatever it is you're looking for. And so they kind of skirt around the like the forced marriage thing, which I was where what I was thought was a little strange. I'm thinking of like 10 Things I Hate About You being the one that comes to mind as the most famous of recent history, but obviously there's not a forced marriage in that. But then she kind of figures out what's going on and decides that she wants to play by the rules. And then Petruchio also decides that tricking her into this is also bad. And so they kind of come to a little bit of a consensus at the end, but
yeah,
all very funny and enjoyable.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right. Let's talk about the third episode. So, the straight poop. Is that what we said it's called? Yeah. The straight poop. You said you could not get this episode to play. So
that is correct.
I will just give a quick synopsis. The plot of this is it starts with Rona Barrett, who is was a reporter of the day, and she's standing in the moonlighting hallway, like the hallway that the office is in, and she's talking to the camera, and she's like, normally this time of night you'd be seeing moonlighting, but not tonight. We haven't been getting any episodes lately. And she goes into the, she takes cameras into the detective agency, and each of the two characters, Maddie Hayes and David Addison, are in their perspective, their rooms. And she goes to each of them, and they're like, I can't deal with him. She's there too much and all this and that. And then it ends up turning into kind of a clip show where they play a bunch of clips from the up until now, the last, you know, three seasons. And it was funny in the sense of like breaking the fourth wall, talking to the audience as though they're watching real people, but also that they're an audience watching people. I thought was really funny because it was kind of it leaned into the absurd. Clip shows are always kind of hard, and I feel like that's a thing that's kind of gone away in modern TV, which I'm glad for, because you know they're never anybody's favorite episode. Although I thought the fact that this one had a great framing device of Rona Barrett being this interviewer who kept like asking people questions, I thought was pretty funny, and I liked that part.
Yeah, and I will say with like clip shows in general, the ones that usually play a lot better are ones that are more self-referential about the holes in the show. So I could see it being better in this show than it would be in like that one terrible Star Trek season 2 episode that's a clip show.
Yeah. So, that was The Straight Poop. And that leads us to the finale, which this is several episodes fast forwarded from 5 episodes from the clip show, 7 episodes from the Shakespeare episode. And we kind of fast forwarded through a lot of story between the two of them, although it's fairly obvious as to what's going on. Maddie has started dating someone else. They're getting pretty serious. Who's the actor who plays, it's someone fairly well known, and I
NCIS guy.
Yeah, it's the NCIS guy, and
oh,
he
fudge.
I can't remember his name, but yeah, he was famous for NCIS, and he was in a bunch of other '90s TV show. Mark Harmon.
Yes.
So they've been dating, and they're pretty serious. And Bruce Willis is like falling more and more into depression, and he refuses to step up and make his feelings known for Maddie. And she seems to like this Mark Harmon character, but there's the classic, like, she likes him, he's perfect, but she doesn't want someone who's perfect. She wants someone who's wrong for her or whatever, you know, the story, it's old, tale as old as time. Mark Harmon proposes, and she says she'll think about it. And then there's a lot of back and forth between him and Bruce Willis, and they fight a lot. And then she kind of like refuses to give Harmon's character a straight answer. And then finally he's like, you're in love with David Addison. You need to just go be with him. I'm tired of playing this side role, even though I'm obviously a much better fit for you. And then she comes home and she finds Bruce Willis in her bed for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of like forces her to kiss him. And then she finally starts kissing them. And then they end up having sex, which is how the season ends.
Yeah.
And so that is the plot.
Well, that's actually the second to last episode of the season.
Oh, yeah, you're right. There is another episode.
But I read the like description, and it's like they both feel awkward about the other one, but then they sleep together again. So it's basically like a rehash.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan of this plot as much. And then the ending, I definitely thought seemed to had a little rapey vibes, but
yeah,
it was also 30 years ago, so I don't want to give it a break, but I feel like people thought a little differently around the concept of kiss her until she likes it concept.
Yeah. And like consent and stuff like that. Like how many of us don't have a story where our grandparents were like, well, she said no initially, but you know, I just kept being persistent. And they're like,
yep.
Oh, he was so persistent. And then you're like, God, what did grandpa do? I don't want to hear this. This is disgusting.
Wow. I didn't know my grandparents were on this episode. Hey, grandma and grandpa, how's it going?
Well, we've been doing good. How about you, old kendo? I don't know what your grandpa calls you. But anyway.
Talking about your sex life on the air here, grandpa. Yeah, that was a way to make a serious moment comedic, I guess.
Yeah, but it's really rough, and she like she picks up a vase to like hit him over the head, and he's like, "No, this isn't worth it." And I was like, "Yeah, good job. Yep, rape, not ever worth it. Sexual assault, not ever worth it." Like, if I'm being charitable, this is unwanted sex, so I would say it's sexual assault. Well, no, it is actually just definitely rape. So it's straight up rape, and it's so not okay. And even if she's like willing to go along with it in the end, you gotta be like, no means no. And so the fact that this episode is like making him be like, oh no, it's not worth it. I mean, I'm not gonna want to do this. I don't think you're worth the trouble or whatever. He like turns her lack of consent into being like about him, which is really disgusting. I just found myself so disgusted with David by the end of this episode. And then him, like, after she slaps him and tells him to get out, he just, like, pulls her close and kisses her. And I was like, oh, my God, this is horrendous. You would never make something like this today. Or if you did, you would get dragged through the dirt, and, like, rightfully so. Because it's pretty icky feeling. I could see how, you know, back in the Wild West of consent back in the 80s, where people did whatever the fuck they wanted to, I guess, how this could be a little bit more passable, but in today's day and age, it's definitely not.
And it's definitely not coded to seem like assault in any way. Like, you as the viewer are definitely supposed to think David Addison is in the right to continue being persistent, and she finally kind of relents and wants/enjoys what happens. You're not really shown much. They just kind of fall to the ground and the episode goes black. But
yeah, it would be totally different if he's like, hey, I think that we'd be good together. And then she's like, no, get out of here. And then he leaves. And then she's like, oh no, I've changed my mind. Yeah. That would be, it would have the same end result of the episode, but it would actually like allow her to make that decision, and the episode doesn't. And so you are left with like this icky feeling of grossness.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that like it did not, I don't even think that, I don't even think that it's going to be talked about at all in the rest of this about how she initially didn't want it and then changed her mind. I think to the writers and maybe the people at the time, this was just kind of like a traditional romance story in a sitcom.
Well, glad that times have changed.
Yeah, so...
Glad that times have changed.
Anything else you want to say about moonlighting? I don't know about you, but I got a lot of blind date vibes, especially in this season. I know Blind Date was filmed right around the same time as some of the stuff we're watching here. And I think it's slapstick kind of antics. I could see coming through in this, and I could tell why someone who was making Blind Date would be like, oh, Bruce Willis would be perfect for this role.
Yeah, definitely. I think also, especially with that one first episode that we watched in season three, the Big Man on Mulberry Street. Yeah, exactly. I think that episode really convinced me that if this was available for streaming and we didn't have to do like literally upload it to a floppy disk, convert that to a you know, USB, and then like mix it onto a record player and then ship it through the mail over to my house, if we didn't have to do all that sort of shenanigans that we had to do in order to get these episodes, I would definitely watch the rest of the show. I'm interested enough in it where I could see myself watching it, but I'm very, very sad that it is not available to see in any easy way, shape, or form.
For sure. And it's funny. I've never put much thought and or desire into, you see those campaigns online that are like, I'm thinking of one particular one that I won't name, but it had to do with a cut of something, but fan campaigns about changes to media, and there's, you know, make a sequel to this or release this feature or do this.
Or make Sonic not look so terrifying.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Remove Sonic's teeth. apparently, it was a fan-driven movement to get this put on DVDs in the first place. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. If you go to davidandmaddie.com, it is a fan site, which has not been updated in nigh on 10 years, at least. It looks like it's even older than that, but it has information on there about celebrating the 3,000 people who supported the campaign to get it put on DVD. So I wonder if we could get the same movement made where you convince the ABC network and all this stuff to put it on a streaming website. ABC is owned by Disney, right? So it could definitely be put on Hulu.
Well, yeah, but I was reading on the Wikipedia page, and it looks like under the distributor, it says Disney ABC Domestic Television, and then it says Sony Pictures Television, current international TV and home video distributor. So that home video distributor thing really, really surprises me, because if this was made in like the 80s when streaming wasn't even thought of, and I mean they barely probably had like VHS sets of shows, I would guess. Maybe they did. Maybe they had that more than I was thinking. But I could see Disney being like, ah, yeah, sure, Sony, you take this. And then if Sony still has the rights to it, I know that Disney and Sony don't get along super great unless a certain webhead is involved. And even then, there was a while where we thought that we weren't going to get a third Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland, and now we are going to get one. So I know that Disney and Sony have had a lot of disagreements, and apparently the fact that Sony is based overseas and there's like some different ways that they run business, and the US side of Disney doesn't tend to get along great with the like foreign side of Sony, and so it's just been a whole big thing. So I don't know if Disney would want to tackle the headaches to get this release, but I would hope that there'd be some world where they would be convinced to.
Breaking news. Beep 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 beep. So davidandmaddie.com, that website I told you about.
Yep.
They have a message board.
Oh.
This, like I said, this davidandmaddie.com, according to both the look and feel of this website and their little copyright date at the bottom, not been updated since 2009. So I thought, oh, well, maybe back in 2009, a movement was made to do this. But no, you go to the message boards. They're updated just a few hours ago. People are posting on here all the time.
What? I like how there's just this pocket of the internet that hasn't heard about Reddit yet, where a lot of this would be very at home on Reddit's website.
r/moonlighting.
Yeah, but instead they've devoted making their own separate little thing to it, which, I mean, like, good on them. Like, you don't want to be under Reddit. Fine, do what you want to do.
This is probably completely under the radar. I mean, I don't know how many people are on this message board.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know. I can't even see where the message board is. Kendrick, where are you seeing that?
So up at the top, right above the picture of the two of them embracing, it says Moonlighting Fan Message Board.
And this website is amazing. Oh my God, there's fan fiction.
Yeah, I think that's the most popular section is the fan fiction.
All right, Kendrick, one of these times we're going to take like two shots and then just read out straight up fanfic from this message board. That's going to be a future episode.
Okay. Also, I want to post this episode on there and see if people can listen. So if you're listening on, if you're part of that message board and you're listening, send us an email. Tell us how we can get DVDs 4 and 5 for seasons 4 and 5. Come on, guest star on that episode.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to hear.
Without having to pay like $130 to some Amazon person.
Yeah, and maybe get them. So.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing about the music.
Yeah, it's kind of a pretty thorough website. It just needs a new fresh coat of paint. But otherwise, it's got some good stuff on there. One thing that I forgot to mention, but I kept noticing when we were watching Moonlighting was I just felt like up until season 3, that one episode where David and Maddie do eventually have sex, I feel like the entire show is just like, hey, we really want to make sure that these two characters, who are both attractive people and very charismatic, we want to make sure that they have as much time to make out and bone as possible. But then they're like, oh no, we can't do that. It's not within the context of the story. So then this show just spends more time creating increasingly weird ways in which to have them do those things. So like the Atomic Shakespeare episode, it's like, oh, it's Shakespeare, it's not moonlighting. And the dream sequence one, it's like, oh, it's just these different people. It wasn't actually them. So I think that knowing that, or at least having that in the back of my mind, made a lot of these episodes make more sense, because I kept going, why are they, what is even the point of having it be a detective show if you're going to reference it being a detective agency once in an entire episode? And of those 4 episodes that we watched, I think that it was mentioned once, right?
Yeah, I mean, the detective agency stuff comes up in that straight poop episode, because they're in the detective agency at the time, so it's talked about then, but they never talk about mysteries in any of the episodes we saw. And to be fair, we skipped a bunch, so presumably what we're missing is the solving of mysteries and the other antics. That clip show episode does have a lot of moments where it appears that they're getting into wacky Three Stooges-esque hijinks around solving mysteries and that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
there might be some of that in there. And like you know, we said a lot of times, if this was on some streaming service and I could throw in an episode, you know, after dinner, like I'm not watching something else, I would totally watch some more of this.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. So come on, Disney, do your thing. Make us watch your shows on streaming services.
Yeah.
I mean, goodness gracious, I watched through like the entirety of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, so, you know, I'll watch basically anything at this point.
Oh, so you did finish?
No, I didn't actually. I say that as if I did, but I think I still have the last episode left. It's just so boring.
Yeah. Did you get to the part where the connection to North?
No.
Oh,
wait, yes, yes, okay, yeah, she right, was right. In the second to last episode.
Okay. I couldn't remember. You hadn't seen that episode at the time when we talked about North, but I was like, oh, yeah. There's a Falcon and the Winter Soldier connection here.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. God, man. All right. Well, Kendrick, I'm starting to look at my clock and I'm starting to see some numbers, but do you have a clock that is any more specific about what time it is?
I have a lot of clocks that are specific on time, actually, and that show numbers, but I only have one clock that's relevant to this podcast.
Oh, yeah? Well, yeah. What time is it on that clock?
That clock says it's time for the Wheel of Willis.
The Wheel of Willis.
So this is not only the first time we've done a two-part episode, it's the first time we've done the Wheel of Willis for two wheels for the same Willis.
Two wheels for the same Willis. That is true, unless your theory about him being the same character in Bonfire of the Vanities and Nobody's Fool is true.
Oh, yeah. And I guess John McClane is the same Willis. But
oh, and the Look Who's Talking. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. Never mind. Right. Never mind. You've proven me wrong.
I was like, yeah, that's right, except for this one thing. And you're like, and this other thing. Oh, and this other thing. Okay, never mind.
Yep. Completely bupkis.
Yep. Sorry to burst your bubble. Sorry to bupkis your bubble.
If this is your first time listening, what we do here is we whisk the Wheel of Willis. And when we spin that wheel, we get a thing and we talk about that thing. And if you want to submit suggestions, how would you do that, Josh?
You could send us an email at williswaypod@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at williswaypod, or you can send us an Instagram message if you want to.
Yeah.
And we are on Instagram at williswaypod.
I will gladly take any form of communique to send us new Wheel of Willis suggestions.
You could send it to our P.O. box. When we get a P.O. box in the future, we will re-edit this episode and put in our P.O. box address here. Yep.
Because we'll be able to hire someone to re-edit every episode by the time we get a P.O. box.
Yeah, that's never gonna get changed.
All that anyways, said, though.
Do you know what we do every time we spin the Wheel of Willis, Kendrick? Do you know what we say?
We say in unison, collectively, together, at the same time,
whisk that wheel! All right, it has been whisked.
You can't make me laugh when we're about to whisk.
Okay, all right. Do you see more Bruce Willis butt or Bruce Willis feet in this show?
There's a lot of episodes where he's in his boxers because it's kind of a running gag of him being basically naked except for his boxers and Maddie like rolling her eyes at him. I don't know if that counts as butt or not. I don't think we saw any of his feet though.
I'm trying to think through if we saw any of his feet. Yes, we did, because when he and Maddie had sex in the Atomic Shakespeare episode, the way that they show that is they're like, oh, both of their feet are sticking out of the end of the covers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they had sex.
That's right. Because up until then, they had been sleeping in separate beds.
Yes. Yeah. A la Taming of the Shrew, a la the thing that it is based upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yep. Yeah. Well, thank you to whoever sent in that suggestion. Always appreciate those. We still have a few more that we can go through on my wheel that we spin, but we always appreciate having more because it keeps the variety going. So we love that. And then we don't have to recycle our Muppets question.
It's been a while, but I'm glad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to this podcast. Like we said, we love it if you would leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And you can find all of our episodes by going to williswaypod.com. And you can find me on Twitter at kmartinix, KMARTINIX.
And you can find me on Twitter at Joshing Carter. And join us next week where we'll be covering... the number noun. film The Fifth Element.
That's a great way to intro that movie.
Yeah, well, do you know how many number noun movies we are covering on this podcast? We've got Four Rooms, 12 Monkeys, Fifth Element, Sixth Sense.
It's a
goddamn.
It's a number of movies. And movies are a noun, so it's like self-repeating.
Oh no. We've gone too meta. It's time to get out of here before we crash. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh yeah.